This week, the Times Union started a series of stories, A City Divided, that charts Albany's history of redlining and other means of systemic racism, as well as some stories demonstrating glimmers of hope within the many communities that make up the city. It's been a point of discussion since launching on Sunday and centered much talk at the South End Community Collaborative meeting online on Tuesday, where those commenting ranged from former elected officials to agency reps, police officers, and SECC host Tom McFeeder, a lifelong journalist who noted the awards awareness that leads to such series, while also thanking the TU for drawing attention to the same issues that community groups have been wrestling with in the Capital Region for years, if not decades.
It was really helpful to see kind of the historical perspective of the article. It did make me really, really sad to see how far back and how in-depth it is. So I think making sure that everybody's aware so that we can make positive change is the best that we can do, and then start coming up with action steps to make sure that this doesn't continue.
The procedure of redlining is alive and well. When we bought land from the land bank in the South End and tried to get a mortgage, we couldn't. And even though we could show that we had enough collateral, they turned us down on insufficient collateral. So the banks are still dooming the area.
The other issue is, you know, that means, you know, the people who are living in these neighborhoods continue to be renters ultimately, or that segue from renter to homeowner is very hard. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think for most people on this call, it's kind of reinforcing what we already know. And again, kind of just driving the work that we're currently doing. I think just using the article and using fuel from the article, we have to come up with solutions, right? I think most of us know what the issue is. Most of us know the history of the issue. How do we solve this issue? And I think that's what this call and many calls, you know, especially in the South End, are about. How can we invest in our community? How can we have community ownership? So I think just kind of coming up with solutions and moving forward in that breath is going to be most important.
There's so many issues. I think as much as we want to try to do them and do them in the South End or Rockville West still on our own, I really think it's going to take a lot of investment from the state, through the feds, from the feds to the state. The state's the one that built as apprentice and moved people in there, you know, and they built the Empire State Building. They're the ones that stuck that housing complex next to the port. They're the ones that are responsible. To me, it's like called the state's original sin, and they need to come forward and correct the mistakes they made. Local, we don't have the money. I mean, somehow we got to get these grocery chains. You know, a lot of them have what they call urban style groceries now. They're not these huge 80,000 square foot stores anymore. They have one in Saratoga. They have some in Rochester. They're smaller, like 10 to 20,000 square feet. They put them right in downtown in the middle of areas. And I looked into that years ago, and I tried to get some of that done here. And they just won't budge in Albany. They just won't do it in Albany. And I think this is where, again, state legislators and maybe local elected officials can try to put pressure on these businesses that they have to invest in the underbanks. I know you mentioned the mortgage. I remember neighbors of mine telling me they couldn't get insurance on their homes. So the insurance companies wouldn't insure our homes in the South End because they're afraid of, you know, too many fires or because of vacant buildings, even though supposedly it's, quote, against the law to discriminate because of a vacant building on your block. But you couldn't get insurance either. So there's a lot here, and I think I really would like to have a sit down with all our state representatives for the local area and craft some legislation that can reverse some of these and get a commitment that, you know, they're going to bring in not $1 million or $100,000 and just go cut a ribbon someplace. We need $100 million or more to build, rebuild some of this housing and to get a mortgage program where people can buy the rehab buildings and get a mortgage to a separate entity since the banks will give them to them after the buildings are rehabbed and take care of these vacant buildings. I mean, they have to step forward. I proposed this many years ago. I called it the Rebuild Albany Authority. It got nowhere. I got laughed out of the assembly saying that it wouldn't fly because it was it wasn't sexy enough like the convention center was at the time. That was sexy. One building that does nothing to help us. So I really think we need to have a sit down with them and keep putting pressure on them. And the heck with ribbon cuttings on in front of a bicycle stand. Let's get a ribbon cutting in front of rehab buildings that are being sold to people in the community. And
I just wanted to point out when we're talking about home ownership and solutions, that we cannot take our eye off the fact that the city and the county are set to get $140 million combined in that COVID relief money. The city of Albany already has really good infrastructure as far as their CDBG program to get down payment assistance and rehabilitation assistance. So I think just sort of expanding that infrastructure, tweaking some of the policies that do keep Black and Brown people from accessing that funding and those programs would go a long way. But also, how do we use this once in a generation money to create that generational wealth? You know, can we take care of this city's blight while creating jobs for contractors, local businesses, training programs for Black and Brown youth to rehab these vacant apartments? It could all be a cycle of creating generational wealth. It's just, do we have the will to use this once in a generation, once in a lifetime money, you know, to promote that?
I just wanted to make note that a place that we might start that Habitat has had a little bit of success with doing, but definitely need more momentum, is using some of the Sunny Mae mortgage products. So that's the state mortgage agency. So they have a bunch of different mortgages. And one of them is specifically for Habitat affiliates. And it's just a really good outline of what a better lending product could look like. And so we use that almost exclusively with Habitat home buyers. But we've also in the past been able to like use that as a model to present to other banks to come up with something similar to it. So it's a nice starting place, I think, for us in terms of thinking, you know, how do we get around mortgages that, you know, rely solely or strictly or too heavily on a credit score? Like, are there alternative forms of credits that banks can use? And the answer is yes, there are. And so I'd be happy to be a part of that conversation and to share the information I have from Sunny Mae.
Harris Oberlander, I think you had your hand up.
And yes. I'll say this, you know, the families that we're talking about, the residents that we're talking about are contending with social policy redlining that parallels housing redlining and lending redlining. And I think we have to remember that even though housing is in vogue all over the place now, especially with the healthcare managed care organizations in terms of being at the top of social determinant of health, poor outcomes, public health, child welfare, criminal justice are all siloed and stilted in a way that, you know, redline these families anyway. There's as a person trying to keep families together and preserve families, what we often contend with is the fact that funding sources are siloed. They don't talk with one another. They don't treat the whole family holistically. They're geared toward punishment and the back end of when families are already struggling. There's relatively little social policy that talks about supporting families where they live in neighborhoods that are urbanized with all the whole spectrum of services that that a family requires that help to support daily living. So as long as we're at it, I would ask that if we're writing letters and expressing concerns about policy and strategy, that we also take into account all the myriad of factors that are driven, in my opinion, first and foremost by racism, that are leading families to struggle in general, not just with their housing needs.
This has been Paul Smart for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.